Dorothy Moore, Misty Blue. Makes you want to get up, take the one you love by the hand, and do some slow dancing in the living room. We're talking about the laws of attraction in more ways than one. Paul Babcock is with us, and we are talking about the secrets of magnetic energy, and we'll get to that conversation in a moment. And we'll also, you can start lining up on the phone lines. We'll take calls, questions, and comments for Paul at the bottom of the hour. Just a reminder, George Norrie and friends are living it up in Asheville, August the 27th, 5 p.m. Hold on and get ready to see a show like nothing else. Join the three-time Emmy Award winner and host of Coast to Coast AM, George Norrie, for a night of fun as he welcomes ufologist Micah Hanks, the Paul Revere of our century, William R. Fortune, and paranormal investigator extraordinaire Joshua P. Warren. For more information, visit coasttocoastam.com. Again, George Norrie and friends coming to Asheville August the 27th, 5 p.m. coasttocoastam.com for more information. And also, just a reminder, coming up in the next hour, the last 2 hours of the program, Mokele Mbembe, the mystery beast of the Congo Basin, with real-life dinosaur hunter Dr. Bill Gibbons. Magnetism, this is from freeenergy.com. Magnetism is a mysterious, invisible force. Both the sun and the earth have natural magnetic fields. Humans discovered natural magnets in ancient times, and the Chinese were first to use natural magnets to create the magnetic compass. Harnessing the invisible force called magnetism has already changed the world. It's given us electricity, radio, television, computers, and thousands of other things. But its greatest gift to mankind is yet to be realized. Magnetism can provide a source of inexhaustible, pollution-free energy. In the last 120 years, dozens of inventors, including Paul Babcock, have reported success in harnessing magnetism to produce excess mechanical energy, electricity, and heat. Paul has developed ways to harness magnetic fields in an ordinary appliance to save up to 50% in their running costs. And he'll tell us more when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you, coming from Coast's Toronto affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. And Paul Babcock is with us discussing magnetic energy secrets and ways to tap magnetism as a source of energy. He says this is technology that's been hiding in plain sight for over 170 years. And again, 1,300 watts of input, electrical input, 1,300 watts. And what comes out is 477 watts, that's about a half a horsepower of mechanical energy, but that 1,300 watts of input is all recoverable, recyclable energy stored as heat. So what do you do with that heat, Paul?
You can heat your house or put it in a thermal mass, convert it back to electricity, run a Rankine cycle, you can do all kinds of things. And the deal is about that 1,300 watts. We purposely built a lot of resistance into the coils when we built it because we hadn't had our switching technology perfected and we needed some current limitation because we were going through transistors by the bucketful. So we purposely built it limited so we could make it work. But our next machine, there's 15 ohms in each coil. And that's where that 1,300 watts all goes up, is this heat. So if I build coils that are 1 ohm, that 1,300 watts will go down to about, you know, somewhere around 100 watts. So I'll have 100 watts input, and I'll still have 477 watts output. So
that's not going to make the physicists happy.
No, it doesn't. And that's fine. Bring it on. I'm up for the combat.
Yeah. Let's get back to the idea that there are two sets of physics, the ones that we learned in school and then the ones that are being utilized in secret labs all over the country.
Absolutely. There is two sets of physics, and that's undoubtable. The one you go to college and pay for basically turns you into a nice corporate drone and keeps you into a box. But the real physics that we've all paid for, the taxpayer paid for, and we owned, is hidden from us. And my take on it is you know, electrogravitics especially is a proven and matured technology. Over unity has been being done, magnetic energy is being done in those secret labs forever, and I'm sure it's applied in the black world all over the place. But the deal is they're never going to give it to us. So if we want it, we have to make it ourselves. And that's what we have to do, is take the rein of the horse and step outside of that box and find the physics for ourselves and build it ourselves. Because if you're waiting for politicians and government to give it to you or industry to give it to you, it's just never going to happen. So we have to be proactive, and everybody has to take a hand in it. And that's where I just have this profound belief and love and faith in the average common man, and he gets it. And that's where it lies. It's a contest of wills. And our will needs to prevail, or we're all toast, in my opinion.
You have sacrificed a lot to bring this technology to the point where it's at now, this proof of concept. And I know there were some dark days for you. You were living alone in a little shack in Alaska.
Oh yeah.
Take me back to that night. Just you, a little hot stove, a little wood stove in this shack. It was, I don't know, minus 40 or something. And you were huddled there with your radio when you got struck by a bolt of lightning, figuratively.
Well, the lightning came a little later after that, but I was listening to the radio, and we had who was basically the Art Bell of Alaska at the time, Anthony J. Hilder, and he had Joseph Newman on as a guest. And I'd been studying Tesla my whole life and reading Bearden and Bedini and a lot of stuff. But then I listened to Joseph Newman speak, and boy, it just hit me that he was making a lot of sense. And he said, buy my book and read it, and then tell me what you think. And so I said, man, I was hooked enough to where I scraped up 50 bucks when I didn't have 50 bucks and ordered his book. And when it came, it was another dark, cold night, coldest winter in Alaskan history, about 45 below zero. I was wounded, had the doctors had got all my money about as low, and if I hadn't had any bad luck, I wouldn't have had any luck at all that particular year. So I'm sitting there by my kerosene lamp wood stove, and I opened up this book and I started to read it, and there was a very simple statement in there that was like getting hit in the head with a frying pan. It was just so profound, and why people don't see the profoundness of it, I've told this to many people, is that he said that there's no relationship between how much electrical energy you expend to make a magnetic field and the strength of magnetic field you get. It's because I can expend a lot of energy and have a little magnetic field, or I can spend a little bit of energy and have a massive magnetic field, depending on how I configure the mass and how I use the windings in a coil. And it just struck me like lightning that here suddenly, in the world of direct and inversely proportional relationships in electrical physics, was a crack in the wall. There was suddenly an indirect relationship. And it dawned on me that I could make these powerful magnetic fields for little bits of energy. And then when I ran the math, the simple math, it said, gee, I hit a point. If I'm running, keep increasing the length of my wire and the resistance, but I keep turning the resistance down, eventually I hit a point where the magnetic field carries as much power as my input pulse that I used to make it. And that was just a major revelation to me. And it just, that's when I jumped down the rabbit hole and I never looked back. And that was the beginning of a life mission. I just knew it was just revelatory that this needed to be explored and figured out, and I was the guy for the job, and that's what I did. And that path, I'm still walking that path. It's never stopped. Everything I've done since then has served that purpose.
And you sort of adhered to a conventional physics and continued to work as an electrical engineer, you probably could have made a lot of money.
Oh yeah. I could have made a lot more money than I did. That's absolutely, if that would have been what I wanted to do in life, I'd be sitting on piles of it right now. But this, this needed to be done. It needed to be explored. I just, it was just from the inside out in a way that's hard to describe. And so it's been one incredible journey since. And I wouldn't have ever done it any other way. I mean, I'm not above dumpster diving and starving to get the job done.
You really feel like, for you, this is an epic mission. You've been given your marching orders from Old Thunder.
Oh, yeah, you betcha, man. The big holy works in mysterious ways. But, I mean, and I was basically prepared through it through life, you know, and I just realized I had this unique skill set that made me qualified to do it, and I hadn't. And I'd purposely, you know, I'm not a degreed scientist. In fact, I have a 2-year technical degree in electronics, and I purposely forego all the academic work to get a degree, and because I just saw it as a waste of my time and effort. All that stuff is wrote down in books, and I read and comprehend pretty well. It was the stuff that wasn't wrote down in books that I was interested in. That's where I knew the key to it all was, that there were just fundamental mistakes in the empirical basic observations of magnetism. I mean, right down to just sitting there and playing with a couple of magnets on the bench, and that it was just improperly described. And it was a long journey to come up with the mathematical concepts that we call abundant inequality. And basically purging my mind of all the wrongness that you get taught. You get set into this entropy, equality type of mode, and that's all true with things that don't have energy content like magnetism. But magnetism, you have to admit up to the fact that magnetism has an energy value, or imparts an energy value. And that's just the way it is. It's hardcore observation and empiricism that led to that.
Well, where did we go wrong in terms of our understanding of electricity? Because it seems to me the takeaway here is we really don't understand what electricity is. We don't understand what magnetism is. But where did we go wrong? Is it the idea that, again, with these equations where the left side has to equal the right side, and it's all based on this closed system?
Exactly. And that's why we, you know, what the group has been working on, many of the group has been working on what they call open system thermodynamics. And it's undeniable. And guys like Mike Waters and Peter Linderman just go out and deal out beatings on a fair. They're nice about it, but they just go out and give their lectures and say how it is. And it's much more to the point and much more correct than the standard models.
Just give us we just have a few minutes here before the break, maybe 5 minutes, but just give us a primer in what is meant by closed system versus open system.
A closed system would be like a transformer to a transformer, or a mechanical input to a standard motor to an electric or to a generator. It's all one source of energy accountable as a unity system. But in open systems, you're taking an input energy that is catalyzing another form of energy that inserts itself into your flow. So, a heat pump is a simple form of that. But so it's like with what we do, an open-ended system, we're putting in one set of energy, but we're catalyzing the other that becomes a part of the process. So I start with some, and I still have the sum, but I get more because these other energy functions and magnetism and heat thermal properties and everything wind up showing up, and you wind up with the output being more than what you started with.
So in a closed system, you have an energy input.
You start with that energy and you end with that energy.
Except a little bit less, because you're going to lose some due to heat, friction.
Yeah, exactly. And the sum always adds up to 100%. If I start with 100, you know, when I, you know, sum the losses and I sum the output of the system, I better have 100, you know. But with an open-ended system, other dynamic forces come into play that generate energy. And then it integrates, and you wind up maybe it's two streams of energy or three streams of energy from another sources that are catalyzed by the initial process. And then you wind up getting more, and that's the abundant inequality concept.
Abundant inequality. And that's how you say the universe really operates. It's, I mean, there's no such thing as a truly closed system, is there?
Only if you make one.
Right. Artificially closed system, right.
Yeah, exactly. No, Mother Nature doesn't work that way at all. Mother Nature is, you know, it's, have you ever, you know, if you don't believe in perpetual motion, I don't know, has the Earth stopped orbiting the sun in 5 billion years? Is that perpetual enough for you, you know? And science doesn't really, you know, the whole universe is this massive electromagnetic body. And if there's electromagnetism, there's gyroscopic mechanical action that happens all the time, and that can also be translated to electrical energy. And that's what Jim and I have been working with, Tesla concepts, where we did the switched energy resonant power supply, is exactly the same thing. It's an abundant inequality where we're using magnetic lines of force to create electrical movement and cancel out forces within generators to where we can create electrical output out of a generator while we've completely canceled out all the lens forces within that generator.
What's it going to take?
Quite well.
What's it going to take, Paul, for you to get your zero back EMF motor to market? Is it? Are you looking for a big investor, or what's standing in the way?
Well, number one is funding, you know, and that's always everybody's big problem. No matter where it's the system is rigged against guys like the true innovators, the small companies. I've watched one small company after the other go down over the years. There's just innovators everywhere out there. And the system is designed to make sure that you don't get the funding when you need it. And nothing happens without funding. Nikola Tesla is a classic example of that. When
Nikola Tesla, for sure.
He knew exactly what he was talking about. He understood all this stuff about magnetism. And so in the early 30s, after J.P. Morgan and the big industrialists had laid out their plans with Nikola Tesla's invention of the grid and power generation and distribution, they really realized that it was obsolete, you know, that these other inventors had already made it obsolete and could produce all kinds of energy from magnetic interactions. And that's where they went and just basically hit it all by tying magnetic action. They just directly tied magnetism to Lenz's third law of equal and opposite reaction and put that into the physics books. And if you go out and do all those experiments and everything, it makes perfectly sense. If you're being taught electrical engineering, it just, yeah, that's the law. And they turn Lenz into a law rather than a sometime true but not necessarily the law for all magnetic interactions. And it made the whole abundant equality concept completely invisible.
All right, Paul, we've got to take a timeout. We'll come back, open up the phone lines, questions and comments for Paul Babcock, Secrets of Magnetic Energy. Here's Quick Silver Messenger Service and Fresh Air taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. All right, this one goes out to all of you fans of psychedelic rock. Elvin Lee, Leo Lyons, Rick Lee, Chick Churchill from Nottingham, England, 10 years after, and I'd love to change the world. And so would my guest, Paul Babcock, and he's trying to do it through magnetic energy. We're discussing magnetic energy secrets. And again, you can see Paul Babcock's device, his zero-back EMF motor, by simply logging on to coasttocoastam.com. And there, the video of this device is right there in the sort of the video slide carousel. Just advance the slides until you come up to the one that says Paul Babcock zero back EMF motor. And again, you can play that video and see it for yourself. And we'll get back to that conversation and your calls in mere moments. We've opened up the phone lines for you. And I can see that many of you are raring to go. Just a reminder that you can listen to my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern on Zoomer Radio here in Toronto. You can also stream it online at zoomerradio.ca. We also have about 30 affiliates throughout the United States. And for a full list of those affiliates, you can go to strangeplanet.ca, click on the radio page, and then go to the affiliates page. You can also take the show with you on your mobile device by downloading the free app, The Conspiracy Show, from Google Play and the Apple Store. All right, let's get back to our conversation with Paul Babcock and your phone calls in mere moments. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM, coming to you from Coast's Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Richard Serrett with you, Paul Babcock on the line from Spokane, Washington. We're talking about the secrets of magnetic energy. And before we get to the phone calls, an email from a Dr. Ed Young in California. Paul, he wants to know what happens to the input current as the motor is loaded down, like with a fan or a pump. On a normal motor, that input current increases to compensate for the workload.
Great question.
All right.
Nothing. The input current is always the same. Whether the armature is loaded or unloaded, there's no interaction between the stator and the rotor whatsoever that way. I can take the rotor, the armature clear out. It has absolutely no effect on the input current. I can drop it in, get it spin, make the horsepower, zero effect on the input current.
All right, let's go to the wild card line, and we're going all the way to the outback, down under, or not outback, but down under anyway. Patrick is in Australia this morning. Good evening, Patrick. Welcome.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you listening to us in Australia?
Oh, clear and crisp through the local high-quality NBN broadband service we've been fleeced $80 billion for.
Well, Patrick,
I have that kind of money to spend. Of course, I've been doing a lot of this work, particularly with an eye on Babcock's work from down under, and having a great deal of success.
You've created the same type of motor?
I'm actually trying it with a standalone isolation transformer. I've had a lot of success with Rosemary Ainslie's circuit, which is widely available. I've had 25 times the output energy for every one unit of try and breathe with my excitement at the same time, for one unit of input energy, making it COP25, which is undoubtedly enough to shape the world's energy foundations. But having had that success, I'm now wanting to move on to something a bit more difficult, and Babcock switching has got me quite excited. I'd quite like to ask a couple of questions about how you went about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
From the same angle.
All right, the floor is yours, Patrick. Go ahead.
Oh, excellent. Now, the first fundamental I'd like to address is the input. Would you recommend running it from a capacitor, a laboratory power supply, or simply a battery?
DC power is ideal. Our machine runs at about 150 volts DC.
This is contingent on all the other coils and whatnot down the line.
Right, the deal about driving electromagnets is what we do with our process is we energize the electromagnet. It does the work. Then we take the energy we put into that magnetic field and we turn right back around and capture that magnetic capture that field, translate it back to electricity, and then refeed that electricity right back into the machine. And that cuts the input current by about 50%, just that process. But the trick is you have to make those transitions extremely fast in nanoseconds. And that took us about, I think we burned up about 2,000 transistors before we had it perfected.
You're talking about the induction spike when the capacitor unloads? Is that the idea?
Well, when the induction spike, when the field collapses on the electromagnet.
And that's what's burning out a lot of your circuitry.
Yeah, and that's what took so many years and which was so hard to master. It's incredibly difficult to control magnetic fields the way we do, because it's not so difficult now, but it was when we started, because the magnetism can just generate such destructive electrical forces right directly back at your circuitry that it just destroys it and burns it up. And that's why so many machines in the past, they work great for about 15 minutes till the magnetism, the magnetic reactions burn up the contacts and the switching circuits. And that was part of it, making it practical, was mastering that technique. And so we make switching time transitions in about 5 nanoseconds, and we're able to beat that effect. And then that power just runs right back into a storage capacitor that's ready for the next cycle, and then it goes in before we use power from the power source. And so we're constantly recycling that electricity. And that's why we have, you know, and the only reason we burn as much energy as we do, because we do have a lot of resistance in the coils. But you take that resistance out of the coils, and the input power is virtually nil. Almost the only thing you're really paying for is the semiconductor losses and what resistance you have in the coil. And if there's no resistance in the coil, your input power drops radically. So that 1300 watts becomes 130 watts. And now all of a sudden I've got a 4 or 5 to 1 COP, and I can tap some of that energy off, feed it.
What is COP?
In.
Explain that term, COP.
Coefficient of power, which in the physics world, the best that can ever be is 1. And when you go over 1, then you're over unity. 1 is unity. But in my world, it's just a matter of engineering. So there's no direct relationship between my input power to my output power. And that's what it's all about, the engineering. I engineering the power consumption out, and I maximize the magnetic coupling for the torque and horsepower in the output. And if my engineering is good, I should be able to do 3 to 5 COP easily.
All right.
And, and then have a continually self-sustaining system that powers itself and leaves excess over to use for yourself.
All right, Patrick in Australia, another quick question before we move on. Are you still there, Patrick?
Would you advise me to use a transformer for this? Largely due to the reason why I choose a transformer rather than a motor is because there's a huge variety of different motors out there, and it's actually quite difficult for somebody to replicate it at home. Whereas if you do it from the position of a transformer, it makes it a lot easier for people to replicate.
Yeah, it's like I said before, there's hundreds of ways to configure the magnetic fields, and if it works for you, yeah, transformers. I've done a lot of work with transformers and had some pretty good success with it.
All right, let's take the international line and say hi to Brian in Montreal. Brian, we just lost Brian. All right, east of the Rockies, Ore is in Erath, Louisiana. Good morning. Welcome.
Oh, good morning. You can hear me all right?
I can, loud and clear, sir. Your question for Paul Babcock.
Well, it's not really a question. I've just been thinking about a generator for the past couple of years with magnets. And I was thinking about using them on the opposite poles, you know, where they would push. You know, and it would be like a shaft with a wheel with the north poles, and then on the housing would be north poles, and they would turn. And I don't know, I was just amazed that he was talking about generators with magnets. And I am a welder, and I have a machine and a generator. And when you change the rods, you change your amps. And I was just amazed that he was talking about it. I really, it's more of a comment. I didn't think I was going to get through, to be honest with you.
Well, you're on the same wavelength, I guess, more or less. Paul, did you have a comment for Ori?
Yeah, if you go on the internet and do a few searches for permanent magnet motors, you will see them out there. People that have just permanent magnets, and I see them spinning. But since I've never got my hands on one to examine and test myself, I can't tell you that it works or not until I do that. But there's a lot of people out there that are showing that. And, you know, if you can figure out how to way to create a imbalance between two magnets, you can most definitely extract energy from them.
All right. West of the Rockies, Frank is in Tucson, Arizona. Good evening. Good morning, Frank.
Yeah, hello. We're talking about energy here. Let's talk about the original source. The Earth has North Pole, South Pole. Energy comes out in the north, returns into the south. Because the molten core in the center of the Earth is floating in a sea of crude oil, it's turning faster than the Earth, which makes the Earth a generator, And that's where the original energy comes from. And so first we discovered gravity, and then magnetism, and then electricity. But everything is energy, nothing is not. And wouldn't you agree that it's the Earth that originally makes all the energy?
I would say that the Earth is most definitely an electrodynamo, electrical device. It's actually a dynamo and a capacitor at the same time, and it's coupled to the sun's magnetic field. The sun is coupled to the galactic magnetic field, mm-hmm. and the entire universe is one great big giant electromagnetic body. And of course, physicists will argue a little bit with that too, you know, the electric universe theory, but absolutely, there's a tremendous amount of Mother Nature has her way. Mother Nature uses pits magnetism against itself for a reason, and that's to keep it in balance. But there's always leakage that comes from that. The universe is constantly renewing its energy value and thermal values from this interaction of magnetic fields. I have a lot of theory work I've done on that and built a lot of models and deal with a lot of people. And so it's really an exciting thing, really trying to understand how the electrical nature of the Earth.
All right, Frank, thank you for that. Let's go to the first-time caller line. Kevin is in Kansas. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've had a pretty interesting night. Still doing my paper out right now, so.
All right, welcome aboard. Your question or comment for Paul Babcock?
Oh, it's for both of you, actually, and even the crew there. I just really appreciate you guys. Like, doing this job, 1 a.m., 3 a.m., whenever it is, it's always a pleasure listening to it. There's always new information that just fills a mind that I haven't even thought of in my years of, you know, going through high school or college. Like, some of the stuff I thought of, but people would call me too crazy or, you know, just make fun of me for it. So I'm glad I'm not, like, the only one here. So it really makes me feel good and makes me appreciate it that this show's even on the air. I mean, I have to listen to a local radio station here that goes off air and is blacklisted this station on certain nights. So whenever I do get it, I love listening to it.
Well, Kevin, thank you for taking Coast on your paper route, and we thank you for your fine company. Let's go to the wild card line. Dave is in New Jersey. Dave, your question or comment?
Great show, guys. Listen, I don't know if I'm magnetized or not, but I can't wear a wind-up watch. And cigarette cellophane, when you get the pack open, sticks to me like glue. And I get an idea for your guest. Maybe can you make some kind of a countertop cooking device to replace the microwave oven?
Oh, that's already been done. It's called the induction oven. So, you know, it's standard electrical physics right there.
Great. Is it for sale?
Oh, yes, indeed. Any appliance store.
Fantastic.
All right, Dave, thank you for that. The wild card line, Jim is in Kansas City. I'm trying to move fast here to get as many in as we can. Jim, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Fine, sir. Thank you, Richard. Paul, I have a two-part question, but it ties in. It seems like a lot of guys like yourself who come up with these great ideas or to me, for what I've gotten over the years, they're either shut down by threat or they're bought out. Paul, do you remember back in the early 80s on The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson had a man on, and the device you're talking about reminds me of an episode. A guy was on there with an 8 to 10-foot tall structure. He had high voltage signs all around it. They shut down the studio lights, and it was a perpetual magnet that he started, and it would rotate, and it just kept going and would pick up speed. And it just shot out all kinds of sparks and energy and everything.
Yeah, that was Joseph Newman, absolutely. And I've studied his work thoroughly. And his machines do work. And that's been verified by many, many scientists who actually stood up. Dr. Roger Hastings tested it. And if you look into him, you'll find all that data. And, you know, I have... You know, like Newman said himself, we all stand on the shoulders of giants, and I've stood on his shoulders quite a bit to get to where I've been. Absolutely. That was absolutely a true event on Johnny Carson.
All right, Jim, thank you for that. We'll try to fit in one more here. Again, the wild card line. Josh is in Gladstone, Missouri. Josh, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Sarrett. Can you guys hear me all right?
Loud and clear, sir. You're on the line with Paul Babcock. Go ahead.
Well, the previous caller, I thought he was going to steal my thunder there. I actually have some pretty dire concerns for your guest, Mr. Babcock. Trying to figure out how to present this exactly. But I don't know if you remember the former Mr. Stanley Meyer, but history tends to show that people that build are in the free energy industry. A lot of unfortunate things happen to them here in the U.S.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm quite aware of that. But I've never been approached or threatened or anything, and I just keep moving on. You know, Eugene Maloff is another example of that, and I've heard horror stories like you wouldn't believe from a lot of other inventors. But hey, you know, right now there's so many people doing this work, and we've come above ground, and we bounce back and forth our ideas and our work between each other, and the time is now. And that's where the public support and the open awareness is. That's why I've published a website so I can communicate with the public across the nation better. Exposure and being up and getting the facts out and keeping your head up above the water so people can see you is your best protection, being publicly aware. And if we all go hide in our labs worried about that, the world won't change. You know, what's it matter if I create all this stuff and then I keep it a secret and then take it with me to the grave, you know?
Well, absolutely. So that was the crux of my question, was any precautions you may have taken against that. And I think you pretty well answered that question.
Thank you.
All right.
On the industrial side, the company we've created to get this stuff to the public, you know, what works against us is the invisible hand somehow managed to always, how they really do it now is to keep funding out of your hands. And it's a very insidious thing how it happens, and we've dealt with that a lot, you know.
All right, so let's direct people once again, Paul, to the website, and that is magneticenergysecrets.com. And there are also some downloadable digital videos there for people if they want to, I guess they can see you sort of in front of the whiteboard explaining all of this, and that'll help, you know, for people to understand. Thank you so much for this, Paul. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, you bet. Hey, Richard?
Yep.
Do we have one more minute?
We don't. I'm so sorry. Okay. We've got to run. All right. When we come back, the Dinosaur Hunter on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.